We really appreciate our sponsorship from Telerik. You can create compelling app experiences across any screen with Telerik Platform. Their end-to-end platform uniquely combines industry-leading UI tools with their cloud services, totally simplifies the entire app development lifecycle. As you know, Telerik offers everything that .NET developers need to build quality apps faster. You can try it free at www.telerik.com/platform. We here at Hansel Minutes really appreciate their support.
From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 421. In this episode, Scott talks with John Daniel Trask about managing errors across platforms with Raygun.io.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. I'm down here in Auckland, New Zealand. Just spending a day here for Code Mania, really cool conference that's going on. And I'm talking with John Daniel Trask, who is with Mindscape. And you guys have a new company within Mindscape. It's like a spin-off or a product?
No, it's just a product of Mindscape, but It's under its own sort of branding quite strongly as its own website. So it's at raygun.io rather than being something underneath the mindscapehq.com address.
Okay. Raygun, RAYGUN.io. And if you think that that name Mindscape seems familiar, it's because back on show 277, we talked with Ivan from Mindscape about polyglot programming. At the time, Ivan and the folks at Mindscape were exploring solving problems with just more than one language. I tend to be a C-sharp focused person. I want to do everything I can in C-sharp. Ivan picks the right language for the job, and you guys made some pretty cool less SAS CoffeeScript things you gave out to the community.
That's right, yeah. And we've continued to be a fairly polyglot sort of focused company ever since then as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, and that's the thing that I thought was amazing about Raygun. And true story, what happened was I and my buddy Greg are doing this startup on this side, and we're doing this iPhone app plus service plus website. So I'm doing ASP.NET and Xamarin on an iPhone, plus I've got this Azure thing, and I wanted an error handling site where I could throw my exceptions, but it was really important that it supported all these different platforms. And I wasn't sure if I was going to be doing Xamarin or native. Mm-hmm. So polyglot programming kind of came up in the sense of I have one product across many platforms.
Absolutely. And I mean, that was one of the core sort of focuses when we set out to build the services. There are other services out there, but they usually focus on one platform, like say iOS or just Ruby on Rails. But if you look at the way that modern software development sort of occurs, like even take your startup here, you know, any sufficiently advanced application tends to talk to a backend service written in another platform. People are using more and more languages and platforms to deliver software. It's becoming quite commonplace.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. We looked at Crashlytics, which I think got bought by Twitter, mm-hmm. and it's really iOS focused. Like it's really back end error handling for iOS.
Yeah. So that was iOS. And I think they also do a little bit with Android, but iOS is their sort of key focus. And there's other players out there that are sort of more focused on Android with a little bit for iOS. And there's other players like Airbrake, for example. They had a few different platforms, but by and large, we've worked really hard to be the only one that sort of has first-class formal support for so many platforms. A mm-hmm. lot of them will say, hey, we have an API endpoint, and the community has written things for this. But then when it comes to the intelligence on the back end for us, say, intelligently grouping the errors together and things like that, you actually have to put some work in based on what language was throwing the error. For example, you don't often get a stack trace, say, from a JavaScript exception, but you'll get a great one out of .NET, or you need desimplification processing for iOS errors to even make them human readable. All of these things are platform specific, so you can't really get away with doing one language and then saying, hey, but it's an open API, go for gold.
Right. Yeah. I went and signed up, I think about 4 or 5 different error handling sites. And the majority of them, of course, had native iOS support for Objective-C. But when I said I was doing this in C# on Xamarin, Then that was an issue. Or they would say, oh, well, one of our fans made a GitHub project
yeah.
that hasn't been touched in 2 years. And then And that's it's not that it's bad. I think that's fine, but it's concerning because when I think about software as a service, where in this case, error handling, management, and grouping in the cloud, and analysis, and all the things that we're talking about, I need to pay you my $50 a month or whatever it is, and have it just work. It's more than software as a service where it runs in the cloud. On the device, I can't have it block the device, use up too much memory.
There's actually a lot of things to consider when it comes to a service like Raygun for reporting errors. And you hit on a great point there about not blocking, or, you know, another challenge these days is occasionally connected devices. So if you've got a mobile device that crashes, but you happen to be in a tunnel or on an airplane or whatever, you as the software developer still actually want to get that crash report. And so we, you know, make sure that certain platforms, we will serialize the exception data onto the device. And then when there's a connection available again, try and resend it later.
So you'll do that.
Yeah, it does that automatically. For I think we've got that in the iOS, the Android stuff, and the WinRT/Windows Phone support. And I think it might have been yesterday, I think we actually deployed the support for JavaScript to do it to local storage if there's no connection, since that's becoming a common scenario as well.
And my little startup also has a WPF application using the desktop CLR. Do you do that too?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, effectively, Mindscape is obviously a .NET company through and through. And so .NET was our first sort of platform to support. But we also brought people into the company and also reached outside the company to bring new people in to focus as specialists on the new platforms that we didn't have so much experience in. For example, like Ruby on Rails, we engaged an external person to help us build that.
So that was actually one of my questions, is that when I met with one of your former employees, Ivan, he was such a talented polyglot programmer, it made me feel like maybe I could be a polyglot, but I don't think I would be awesome on every platform. And I'm looking here at your list, you've got Cold Fusion and Python, and like, how do you know that you're doing those in the idiomatic way appropriate to that platform?
So we have a bunch of them as skills inside the company where we maintain them ourselves. But I smile. Obviously, listeners can't see me smiling. The Cold Fusion one's an interesting one because that was where a friend of mine in Wellington, New Zealand, he is actually an international trainer on Cold Fusion, and he saw we were building this and he really, really wanted to get involved. And so we basically came to an agreement where he runs a consultancy and we said, hey, you know, you write this and maintain it. You can, you know, use Raygun. And so he's actually the person that is effectively running point on the Cold Fusion stuff with us. And so we don't try to claim that we're an expert in Cold Fusion. We are experts quite comfortably in ASP.NET, JavaScript. I don't like to admit it, but we have a little bit of the PHP skills in the house. Node.js, you know, we run a lot of these languages as well for parts of Raygun itself. So we've got Node.NET. Mono, we're building a Xamarin app in the mix.
But juxtaposing that to what I was complaining about before, where someone who's like a fan makes a library, with this Cold Fusion one, he's a consultant.
Yeah, but he works with us though on it. So it's not just that he's a random fan that happens to hack on it when he wants to use it. It's an actual, you know, professional engagement
between. And it's tested and it's treated.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like a first class citizen.
Absolutely, and we also have the ability to tweak it if we needed to. It is owned by us. Yep.
This idea of, you called it symbolification. I assume that means you are getting stuff from Android and iOS that are crash dumps that don't give you that nice stack trace that I'm used to getting. You need to detangle that, almost like a source map.
Yeah. Effectively, it's really only iOS, since Android's sort of Java predominantly. You can use C++ on Android, but most people don't. But on iOS, where it's all an unmanaged type of language, you get a stack trace, which is really hex addresses in memory. And so when you do a build in, say, Xcode, and it will generate a DSIM file. And so you provide the DSIM file, which is basically like a PDB file in the .NET world. You provide that up to us, and we have a service that's running on one of our servers that effectively takes your crash dump and then can unstitch it against the DSIM file, and turns all of those hex addresses into function names, file names, line numbers, and the such. So it makes it so you can actually action the crash report, and that makes it really useful for developers. And we're just beta testing now an automatic uploader for the DSIM files that automatically detects when you do an archive operation with an Xcode and says, hey, you've just done a new build. You know, do you want me to automatically send this up to Raygun so that we don't ever miss a DSIM file for people?
I see. So does that mean every time I do a build or every time I do an important build?
It's effectively an important build. So in Xcode, when you perform an archive, that's really preparing you for to do a deployment to the store, as opposed to every build. You could, of course, send us the DSIM file on every build if you are running, you know, private tests or anything like that, but it's not required.
So I'm going to log in here, and we've got a number of applications. I've got the, both the Windows version of my startup, and I'm actually using, we're using this right now. You can have, there's a trial mode. So we're using trial, and it's got active errors and resolved errors. So this was interesting to me because it's not just like ELMA, you know, error logging modules and handlers, which is what I'm used to using for the last 10 years with web applications. But it's also has a bit of a workflow and of an ALM lifecycle management process there too.
Yeah. So when we build up these groups, so let's say you send us 1,000 errors and, you know, 999 of them are actually the same error. We group them together. And so when you're sort of looking at fixing that error, you want to mark it as resolved. You want to take it off your list, that sort of thing. So that's where you can say within Raygun, this is now resolved. That way, if it reoccurs, we make sure we send you an email, you know, all arms waving, saying, hey, 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 you thought this was resolved and it's happened again. You can also temporarily ignore things, or a big selling feature that we didn't really build it thinking it would be a key selling feature, but permanently ignored has been a real hit for us.
See, that seems like a pragmatic idea, but also a bad idea. Like, you're basically saying there's a whole lot of errors, but oh, there's that null reference exception we don't worry about.
Yeah, that, I mean, it could be used in a nefarious way, but the usual use case though is spam bots hitting sites. So if I hit hanselman.com/wp-admin, the standard WordPress admin page, and it throws an error, you're unlikely to want to spend your weekend trying to fix that because it's not a real error. You just don't want to be told about it anymore. And it's great for web applications for being able to filter out stuff, and also for people who are dodgy that want to.
Yeah, yeah. But that is a valid point, because I do get, you know, weird errors where someone's basically fuzz testing.
Yeah.
Right. Fuzz testing means that they're sending just all sorts of random data to see if they can break something. And all my system's going to do is either route it or fail to route it.
Yeah.
But because I haven't built it into the system to capture that error and put up a 404, which I should, they're probably going to get some error, an error 500.
Yeah. But you've got better things to do with your time than, you know, try and build support for people trying to attack your site.
Mm-hmm. Well, so I'm looking here at an error that I caused on purpose, because I wanted to one of our application uses SignalR, and I wanted to push it with a concurrency issue, and I caused a connection error here. So I come down to the bottom, and I notice that you actually even you know the name of the machine that I'm on. You give me the version number of the app, and then I can click on environment, and you're actually telling me how much memory the device had at the time as well.
Yeah, so in certain environments, that's really important, in particular for the mobile apps, because quite often the problem is that they're quite memory constrained. Mm-hmm. It's less of an issue probably if you're running it on a, you know, fairly decent web server, but it can be useful to spot that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So we try and pull as much information as we can, and there's also extra information that you can provide to our API if you, you know, basically have opted people in or let them opt in to providing more information. So we have real user tracking. So, for example, if you had an application where people log in, you might tag the Raygun client with their email address. And then that way, when errors occur, you actually get their gravatar will come up. And can then get in touch with them and say, hey, you know, it's Scott here. I fixed this error. Sorry about that trouble. Here's a credit.
How do I do that? That sounds like a good idea, because I right now I have a Windows app that's in the Windows phone app that's in the store.
Yep.
And I hooked up a thing called Little Watson.
Yeah.
You know, which is a great community contributed thing that basically serializes the error and then emails you.
Yeah.
So I send apologies a few dozen times a week.
Yeah.
To people. Yeah. And then, but with Little Watson, they know that they're sending their private information out because they had to initiate the email client.
Yeah, right. Yep. So this is one of these things where, again, we sort of push people to say, you should probably put something in your privacy or terms and conditions of your site if you're actually going to be reaching back out to them, because you don't want it to be spammy at all. And you need to make them aware that you're doing it. But effectively, it's just one of the overloads on the Raygun client, is that you can set the an identity for the user. It doesn't have to be an email address, but if we detect it's an email address, we'll try and pull a gravatar from them for them as well. Because we sort of started building this product initially because I feel like, you know, software quality is still a big problem. You know, it costs the world a lot of money and there's a lot of things that could be improved there. But at the end of the day, we are engineers and we look at it from a technical point of view. But the success of software is all about how the user finds it. You know, and so there's a lot of these other tools, they focus a lot on what the engineer is thinking and not enough about how many users are affected. You know, if I have 1,000 errors and it affected 1,000 people, or I had 1,000 errors, but it only affected one person who just, you know, got stuck in a loop, you know, understanding impact is important.
Yeah, I think I'm going to do that. I'm going to put in, I like the idea of having their email address, definitely something that's personal information. I'll put that in the settings.
Yeah.
And then I suppose I could tell Raygun, this user has opted in for anonymous, and this user has not opted in for non-anonymous checking.
Well, you can also, we have the ability to attach any custom data, and that's not just a key value pair. That's actually a rich object structure because it serializes down to JSON. And so you can send whatever you want. So if you wanted to also, for example, record, are they a paying customer? Are they doing all these sorts of things? You can send them through attached to the error information. There's also, on the providers that you integrate, we recommend that people sort of do explore the API because you might want to filter certain fields. So, for example, we run an e-commerce store for Mindscape. And if an error occurs on the credit card page, we don't want to be sending the credit card number through as part of the form variables. So you can set up common things that you don't want sent, and we'll just filter those out so that we never receive them. So we have customers that are quite comfortably running using Raygun even from PCI compliant environments where they can filter out all of the things that they need.
So when you say filter out, you're not even, it's never even going across the wire.
Nope, never comes to us.
Nice, you catch it in the client.
Yeah.
Now, is the application an ASP.NET app that runs in the cloud somewhere?
Yeah, so the main application is a standard MVC application running on a Windows box. The front-end public site is also an ASP.NET app using the N2 CMS. That's an open-source CMS that we use that for the Mindscape site as well. It's quite a cool, lightweight CMS. But, yeah, all of the stuff that people are generally working with in here is sort of stock standard .NET. The de-simplification process that we run is written in Go.
Oh, cool. So we had a Go engineer on the show last week.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I mean, I quite like Go. It seems like quite a nice language. And we use Node.js for the front-end endpoints for the API at the moment. Yeah, and we've done a bunch of stuff with Mono as well. And like I say, we do actually use a bunch of the languages that we're supporting almost every day at Mindscape. So,
yeah, it's I like this idea of polyglot programming, but also the recognition that different platforms exist. You've extended that, though, with this idea of a plugin model that says you don't have to just use the ALM, the application lifecycle management apps that we use. You can pick your own. Like, I use Trello and GitHub. Trello is the Kanban board. Someone else might use Jira and Campfire.
Yeah.
You know, but and you support all of those as plugins to kind of fit your app into my existing structure.
Yeah, so there's two things here, and one is that I fundamentally think that if you want a product to be successful with developers and teams, it needs to integrate in with their other tools. It needs to become part of a workflow, and so we wanted to make sure that Raygun just snapped in. And then secondly, it's useful. And then thirdly, it's that we get a lot of feature requests. So for example, at the moment, we've been fending off people saying, I want to be able to assign a bug, and then I want to have more statuses that I can configure, and then I want to add some fields. And before you know it, we've built Jira. And we don't really want to build Jira. We want to build Raygun. And so that's where we sort of see it as going, hey, the more we can integrate, the less we necessarily need to do to the app. Because there's always that, and you'll understand this a lot being kind of like a product guy, Scott, is that there's that balance between trying to do too much and keeping it simple for new users and, you know, hand-holding people through the experience to become power users without putting them off at the very start. There's all of those sorts of challenges that we have with Raygun that we see some of those plugins sort of helping us resolve.
Yeah, the UX when you started, like I really didn't, to be honest with you, when I signed up, I really didn't think I needed any of that stuff.
Yeah,
I signed up for a trial. I saw that it supported my platforms. It gave me an API key, and then it said, here's three lines of code, because I was doing the WPF side.
Mm-hmm.
I made a new client, gave it my API key. I hooked up the error handler, and then I said, here's the exception to the error handler. And I haven't thought about it since.
Yep. And that's fairly consistent feedback. And one of the challenges we almost have on marketing it is that people usually can't believe how quick it was to put in.
Well, because I'm always afraid that the error handler thing will cause more errors. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm doing async and await and all sorts of crazy threading in my app. And I'm just like, I mean, to be honest with you, you mess me up once and I'm going to pull you out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So then I start getting my errors and I'm looking here. I'm showing you my dashboard. And then I noticed as I'm poking around, it says, oh, look, here's plugins. And of course, everyone's very icon focused right now. And mm-hmm. you guys do a great job of showing icons. And then I see the Trello icon, which is a very distinct icon. And it happens to be pinned to my taskbar. And I go, wait a second. I have Trello.
Yeah.
And then I say, oh, I have GitHub. Oh, I use Fogbugs. And then I start linking things up. And then I realize that I can assign, like I know that I have a bug that I've had for a while. I've been trying to track it down.
Mm-hmm.
It exists as a card in my Trello Kanban board.
Yeah.
When I see that an instance of that bug come in, now I can link.
Yeah, you can either link it to an existing item or you can create a new item directly from within Raygun. And I mean, across all of the plugins, we get a lot of feedback, either people wanting additional systems to be supported. So I know we're working at the moment on Slack, which seems to have taken the world by storm recently, but also just more options to pump data into those plugin providers. So for example, if you wanted to create a GitHub issue, mm-hmm. you know, whether we attach the stack trace or other information to that issue to help you out when you're on there, you know, there's a lot we can do there. And we also have the generic webhooks is not, you know, we shouldn't overlook that, which allows you to sort of say, hey, I just want to be notified about these errors occurring and I can then pump it into other systems. So we've got Zapier integration, for example, using the webhooks. So if you wanted to then hook it up to almost any other service, you can take the data that's coming out of Raygun. But yeah.
Yep. See, look at that. That's amazing. And then boom, then it's in there. So let me ask you this, though. When you're running this as a service, you're going to become more popular. I assume it's all running in the cloud somewhere.
Yep, it's all running in the cloud.
Under your desk.
No, we moved it out of my desk a few weeks, but no, it's all hosted in the cloud at the moment. It's in a mixture of different providers. At the moment, it is predominantly with Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
We do have some parts with other providers, like we used DigitalOcean for a little bit of stuff for a while. But it's growing. It's pretty. We've been continuing to battle harden the whole service.
How do you make battle hard? I like that, battle hardened. How do you make sure you're not going to lose any of my exceptions, though?
Yeah. So we have several sort of layers of protection for that. So when we receive the data, the first thing we actually do is persist it to a private S3 bucket for you that we have. That's almost part of our like longer term. If we have to replay messages to restore data, we can do that. But we also use it for, say, load testing. We can pull data off there and throw it back at the service in our staging environment just to simulate it with real world data. We also write all of the data into an Elasticsearch cluster, and our Elasticsearch cluster is getting effectively backed up. I think it's a couple of times a day it gets snapshotted. Mm-hmm. So for example, we could either restore Elasticsearch and then replay a little bit off the S3 raw data. There's a couple of other data stores in the mix, like we use Amazon's RDS, and that's got daily snapshotting as well. And, of course, all of those things, like, say, for example, Elasticsearch. Well, the default setup for a reasonable Elasticsearch cluster is 3 nodes, and that's already got sharding built in to ensure that you can lose one of those nodes and still have full access to data. And so we've kind of got multiple layers there of redundancy mm-hmm. and the ability to replay the data if we wish.
So even if there were an S3 outage, you're still putting it in Elasticsearch.
Yeah. And the Elasticsearch cluster is running on a whole different hosting company. And then on top of that, they could lose some of their servers. And, you know, I feel like I have to be, you know, knocking wood here when you ask me these questions. Well, but
that's important though, right? Because like I said, I don't want to ever have to think about it.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And so we've put a fair bit of work into trying to make sure that it's a very resilient service. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we think it's actually a really valuable service. And, you know, people do build things for recording errors for themselves, and that's cool. But I think you can sort of do it at a really professional level, which is what we're trying to do. And that means taking away concerns about, you know, losing data or app outages and all of that.
Have you found that it's been difficult to keep your error handling things and the work you have to do, which is to post, you know, to collect debug data and post it out from causing a problem with an application itself, from preventing it from getting any worse? I mean, a crash is bad.
Yeah.
But you also need to make sure that when you come back and deserialize your data and then send it off, that you're not going to put the app in a state where it's no longer able to even start or something like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, we've generally tried to build all of the providers to be super defensive around that. I mean, we've had, you know, all of the providers are open source as well. So you can jump on GitHub and actually at them all and kind of go, oh, I can see what they're doing here. And if you, you know, saw anything that was dodge, we'd hope you'd speak up.
No, but that's interesting that you would do that. That basically, in my mind, that kind of changes the whole conversation because there's implicit trust.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, okay, well, they seem like a good company and they seem to know what they're, you know, and it hasn't crashed anything yet.
Yeah.
And then I just asked my obvious question just now.
Yep.
Which, you know, a naive question, but I meant it because I honestly didn't know.
Yep.
And then you're saying, well, oh, well, those are open source, so go look at them and you can see exactly how we are being defensive.
Yeah. And to be honest, there has been work that we've had to do to try and make sure that that's how it works. I mean, for example, we've instrumented Lightspeed and the Web Workbench product inside Visual Studio, and that, you know, we found a whole bunch of other challenges of actually being inside Visual Studio when an error occurs, which tries to keep on soldiering on like a trooper, but you know, there's times in there where it doesn't work so well. So we've had to make updates to the
Lightspeed?
Yeah, Lightspeed's our object relational mapper that
I see. You know, so when that lives inside of Visual Studio,
it has a design surface and a migrations framework and all of that, similar to what
you know. You have multiple products as a company.
That's right. Mindscape sells a suite of products to .NET developers, and Raygun's our first product that targets almost all developers, it's any language. Yeah.
But this is interesting because then you're now using your own stuff, right? You were
dogfooding. Yeah. We were dogfooding this since, 2012, late 2012. So literally one of the highest value things was that, being the sort of, you know, cavalier guy that I can be at times, I updated our online store just before going away for Christmas 2012. And I went back to my house and I was packing my bag and I got my Raygun notification that alerted me that I'd actually made it so people couldn't buy anything from Mindscape. And I was about to go away for 2 weeks holiday. Oh. And I was like, oh, okay, well, I probably wouldn't have noticed that because while I did get email errors sent to myself, I'd sort of stopped paying any attention to them because most of the time they were junk from spam bots and things like that. And now that we had a system where I sort of trained it, you know, permanently ignore the spam bots, when this came through, it was kind of like, this is quite broken. Mm. And so it was a moment like that where it's like, yeah, I'm really glad we've built this and we can use it ourselves and we're seeing value from it. And that was sort of the first inkling that, yeah, we're probably onto something quite good here.
Yeah, definitely. That's pretty cool. Yeah, I'm excited to be using it. There's a lot that's going to happen when I launch my little startup with Greg in a month or two.
Yep.
And because there's so many moving parts, and like you said, any non-trivial application requires a back end. I've got a SignalR hub and I've got Windows apps and I've got a web app and mm-hmm. an iOS app. There's so many things that can go wrong. And I'm really concerned that I'm not going to have any insight into what's going on in that. Am I going to be able to plug this into other kinds of insightful things? Like if I wanted to use New Relic, I could use New Relic to do profiling and things like that and still capture exceptions with you.
Yeah. So a bunch of, I would probably say about 30 to 40% of our customers use New Relic with us. And it's a common question is to say, why do I need both? When New Relic is obviously fairly focused on the performance side of things, they capture errors as well, but it's not their focus. It's not that awesome.
I think of them as a production profiler.
Yeah, absolutely. And they do a great job at that. And that's why people end up, you know, they typically say, what's the difference? And then they just end up using both of them. But you can certainly work with other tools. We try to make sure we play nice with everybody else. Mm-hmm. At the moment, I'm not aware of anything that we actually conflict with. So that should be fine.
That's very cool. And you work now, I think I saw something on Twitter today about Xamarin.
Yeah, so we've got fantastic support for Xamarin's their mobile solutions, as well as if you're just using straight up old mono, it works with that. And we've been working reasonably closely with them for about the last 6 to 9 months. Mm-hmm. We've been finding that they've been promoting it through Xamarin University, which is really cool. And we're in the Xamarin component store, and people seem to be really liking it. It was one of those things that, again, coming a little bit from our .NET background, we were acutely aware of who Xamarin were, and we have a huge respect for them and their company.
Yeah.
And so it made sense for us to sort of evolve it onto that for the mobile stuff. We're also looking at releasing, you know, the Raygun app ourselves for iOS. And so we've been writing that and using Xamarin's tools.
Would that mean I would be able to get my notifications and my errors and dig into stuff while on the go?
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
Okay, that's cool. Because right now I've got it set to do a digest.
Yeah, so we have the real-time notifications, and you get a daily digest. And so we'd like to have it so that you have a mobile version of the app that's actually an application itself, rather than just a responsibly designed one. I'm just going on a tangent here for a moment, but it's been one of the things that I've found a little frustrating, I guess, has been that we've made the app so it's responsive, and that doesn't seem it seems like a lot of work.
So you're talking about the web app. So I'm taking the app now, and I've gone and made it very small.
Yeah.
And then the menu went away.
Let's see how the text there's got a little logo overlap, but on the whole, you can kind of still use it. And the thing that's been interesting about that is, yeah, it works, but I don't think it's a particularly awesome experience if you're on a phone, you know. And so that's where we want to kind of make it so we do promote using an actual app, because rather than trying to fudge the UI to make it work when it's small or big, you mm-hmm. kind of just make it so you focus on a computer screen for the web app, or a phone screen for the actual app.
Yeah,
so,
I definitely agree that when an app gets complicated enough, responsive design tends to fall down. I've seen that with with Gmail, right?
Yeah.
Why do they need an app? Well, at some point you want to take advantage of the hardware. You want to have real-time notifications.
Yep.
You want to have local storage.
Yep.
You're going to push HTML maybe a little farther than it's used to going.
Well, I mean, even if you look at the exception details there, I mean, a stack trace is probably a prime example of something that's difficult to shrink down and do nicely. And it's hard enough to do it in HTML. But, you know, if we can at least do it inside an app, we get a lot more control.
Well, and even if you look at GitHub's recent responsive design, a lot is lost.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you're not going in and doing diffs and approving pull requests very much from the mobile version of the GitHub.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, very cool. Thank you so much, John Daniel, for chatting with me today.
Oh, well, thank you for your time.
You can go up to raygun.io, raygun.io, and check that out. Sign up for a trial and check out the cool stuff that Mindscape's doing. I really appreciate it. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.